Hello, and we're going to talk about Chapter 2 today. In Chapter 2, they talk about averages and how different statistics can use average in a different way, such as mean, median, mode. And I am Robert.
Marquitra.
Martez.
Nayala.
Question is, does it matter if a company uses mean, median, or mode to describe an average?
All right, so the author says that the average pay of employees is $1,000. So people will assume that the average that most employees make will at least be around $2,000. So the question is, what does that mean? And there are many things to consider, like, is it $1,000 a month or $1,000 a week, like, without taxes, with taxes? So there are a lot of things to consider when you're talking about averages.
And there are a lot of things that actually affect the averages as well. Like when you're talking about outliers that greatly affect the data, just like the example we that Marquitra already told us about, how the employees gets like an average amount of $1,000. So the median would be like $2,000, what people would think. But the other example that he provided was for how the boss would get like $10,500 while the employees would just get $500 each. So that's a great outlier that affects the data in a big way. So should we also include the outliers or should we not? Should we classify data?
I feel when they're talking about averages of a pay wage, they should leave a range for the numbers. So from 1,000 to 2,000, that way that people don't get confused about what's actually they're going to make.
I think they should take everybody who has their own individual job with their own individual pay, like each group, and do different types of data that way.
Because it also like greatly depends on
Because basically, like, everybody gets paid differently, so you don't really know. If just take all the people that get paid the same, and then you can make your data that way. It's more accurate.
Also, yearly things affect it. Like, how long have you been working the job affects how much you get paid. Like, some people, like, the longer you work, the more you get paid. But then also, in some jobs, if you work this long, you actually get paid less. So it's kind of confusing based on the job and the job description.
To close out this discussion, to give y'all a little bit more understanding, the definition of mode would be the most frequent number. So basically, out of everybody's pay, the most frequent number that you see, that would be the mode. And the median is the number in the middle out of the whole set of data. Like, once you cross off the numbers on each side and you find the middle.
And the arithmetic mean average would be to add up all the workers' pay and divide it by the amount of workers or something.
We are now going to talk about hiding data to make basically like things look the way that you want it to look.
So in Chapter 3, it's talking about taking sample size portions from each set of data to get the results that you want. And it can really, like, it really works well when you're in marketing or something like that trying to sell a product, but it means that the information that you're sending off to customers isn't true. And it could cause a lot of problems, and it's very misleading.
So basically, you're lying about your data just so that you can get what you want and get better in your life, but you're not really helping anybody else because
so
you're lying.
Like, my opinion to this may kind of contradict what I said like in our last broadcast, but manipulation of data to like support your hypothesis, theory, or your statement actually is kind of a correct thing to do because of whatever you're describing or backing up what you want, you have to manipulate what you know in order to get people to lean on to your side. So I think this is probably fine, because if your customers really wanted to know more about what they were using, they would do the background research or find the ways and read into the context to clarify what you're talking about so they would actually know. But customers who don't really care that much deserve to like get what they get.
Also, like Nayala was saying, it's not lying about the statistics because they're just collecting data to support what they're trying to sell. No one told them to get data that's bad for their product.
You don't have to get bad data, just truthful data so that people actually know what they might get out of your product so then they're not misled.
But it's not like they're taking numbers and changing them. They're just getting the numbers that they received.
But they're only getting the good numbers and not the bad.
They're just wording them differently than they actually... They're not changing the data itself, like what Martez was saying. I think you're kind of like misinterpreting what I was saying. Yes. They aren't manipulating the data themselves. The way they're choosing to present the data is what they're manipulating. So
Right, like only taking the good and not the bad.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, if you're if you wanna buy like cream for acne or something, and they say, oh, it works, you know, 87% of the time, then it's probably only 87% of the data that they chose to use. So it doesn't really help the customer, and it doesn't mean that it will always work for you. It's beneficial to the people on the opposite side trying to sell the product, but it doesn't really work for someone that wants to get rid of acne and, you know, now they just wasted $20 on something that didn't work.
I mean, like, I agree with you on some extent. I mean, like, they can't only take 80% of the data. I think instead what they would do, they would take 80% of the population, meaning, like, they could say that it works 80% of the time. That actually may be referring to, like, let's say a Native American or, like, a Black community. Whereas when it works, like, 90% of the time, they can actually take that from a different racial community, so it works on different types of skin. But they didn't clarify that when they were advertising.
So isn't that, like, another thing, too? You're not really sure the people that they tested.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was an equal number of people of the same group, like, was it an equal number of Blacks, Whites, Asians, whatever?
One would assume that they test everything, but...
So basically, you shouldn't assume that any of their data is correct. You should check it for yourself, because that's the best way.
Don't assume.
This also ties into probable and standard error. For example, in studies about pay wages or test scores, important things can be ignored, such as leadership qualities that the test subjects hold.
So I wonder if probable error or standard error really affect the data that you collect, or it doesn't really change what you would get from it.
First of all, I think that error always affects your data. Because there's always going to be some part of human error. The question is just how much error there is acceptable until the data gets, like, off balance and winds up not to be true anymore. So I think it's just that when it winds up not to be true, it's like there's so much error that it keeps on collecting over time, so it's so off balance. But if you find out, like, what the common error is, and like a set example, like, you know, the data is always going to be off by 2 or 3 inches or something when you're measuring something, then you could take that average of that and, like, subtract it from the whole data.
What about, like, what it doesn't measure? Because another example was, like, test scores and measuring, you know, how smart a person is, but there are things that aren't tested when you're taking the test, and all you're getting tested on is English and math, and it doesn't really show how smart you are. It's more of what you remember in school. So, like, that's another part of your brain that's not being measured, and that isn't counted for.
Then isn't really the error in the data that's collected, it's error in what data is collected. Then it's not that what's collected is wrong, it's like how the whole example was, you know, how it's not the data that collected was wrong, because if everything's, like, it was correct, but I'm saying it's how the study was
given.
Yeah.
If we look at things like test scores, there's always going to be hidden outliers that affect the statistic. So it only works when we're doing mathematical reasoning and numbers instead of based on qualities of a human being.
That's why when people start studies, they need to click... when people start studies, they need to have things that can't really be affected as much and things that are just affected by... There are things that can affect the independent and dependent variables, so when a study's started, they need to take in mind those and pick the correct ones. And then focus their question on what they find out.
So it doesn't really change the data that you collect. As long as it's not a drastic change.
No, I'm saying that error does affect the data. It's just that how much of it is, like, can you still use the data?
Mm-hmm. Because there are also, like, you know, rather than standard error, there's also a human error. So there's always going to be error in your data. So
yeah, and so there's another thing of, is it better to use, like, actual real-life examples, or should we use, like, examples using technology? Because of, like, for example, if in statistics class or, like, middle school, you're flipping a coin, see the probability of
the outcome.
And so there's also virtual coin flips as well, but those use, like, a mini equations or whatever, so it has, like, a random chance of 50-50.
Even that's, yeah.
So it's the question of, should you use things like that or just real-life examples?
I also think that it's okay if you acknowledge the errors in your data to the public that you're showing. So, for example, if you're going to be off about 4 inches on every measurement you take, if you display that and let people know that, okay, this is off by 4 inches and they can account for that, then your data is
well, if all your data is off by 4 inches, then, yeah, if it's all the same, it's not like, you know, I don't know, like 16% of it was correct and the other percentage is like, you know, it's off by 2 or 3 or 4 inches. It's all an equal amount of inches, so does it really count anymore?
So during the pause, we were having a small, unrecorded debate of how data can be affected, and Rob had brought up
CO2 emissions and how if you're off by a certain measure for each CO2 emission, does it really matter to show the people the data? And even though it may frighten them by showing them this high CO2 emission when you clearly know that it's wrong.
But and then I had brought up the fact that, like, if there's impending doom about the sun getting closer over a certain amount of time, and you're measuring that, oh, over 5 years or over a decade, it gets 5 meters closer. If you get that off by 1 meter or a few meters, it's going to mess up the yearly
change,
and it's going to actually affect it a lot, especially if you're preparing for doom.
Okay. I don't know. There's a lot of things to consider when it comes to statistics and probable error or standard error, human error. A lot of things come into consideration.
In chapters 5 and 6, the book talks about how graphs can be misleading by using different axes or graphs that don't make mathematical sense, such as in the Gizmodo article, where they use a graph pie chart that totaled to 193%.
So the article has a bunch of graphs that are misleading. An example would be like the bar graph that they showed, where everyone knows that on a graph it's supposed to start at 0, but in one of the graphs it starts at 3.14%, and there's only a 0.1% difference between each, and it looks like the information is much bigger than what it usually is, when there really isn't a difference in the information that we're receiving.
Mm-hmm. And everybody actually should know that when comparing graphs, the numbers on the X or Y axes, one of the axes should be the same, so it's easier to make a comparison. But if the numbers are completely different or off, then it's harder to compare the data, and your comparisons are less accurate.
So we all went and found our own website to do some more research on misleading graphs and misleading statistics.
For example, in my article by Washington University on how to lie, using pictures as images of the United States shaded to determine who likes, loves, or hates pizza. However, that data is misleading and cannot truly relay that there is more Americans who love pizza than hate it, because it doesn't account for the amount of people in each state.
My article is about different misleading graphs and how the depiction of graphs can be misleading. Like, for instance, if you do a 3D type graph, you can show different type of figures, and if one figure is bigger than the other, it's going to look like it's a more of that kind. Or if it's like a drawing, like it was something comparing cats, dogs, and horses, and somebody drew the horses really big, so you would think that it was more horses than dogs because it was further along the paper than the rest of the stuff.
My article is from a health website which talks about the patient experience, and we had noticed and we had also researched how the graphs were actually misleading because of the ratings where the patients' experience for the hospitals are actually on different scales, so people don't really know what's going on there.
And my article was a Forbes article about misleading pictures in the graphs, and one of them was a bar graph that didn't have any numbers on the y-axis, which was very misleading, and another one of a more picture graph, but with numbers next to it, but the pictures didn't make mathematical sense.
So a question we were asked by our viewer was, what is the advantage of a stratified random sample and what difficulties does it pose, according to chapter one? So stratified is actually from stratum, and stratum is a plural word of, strata is a plural of stratum. And stratum is a level or class to which people are assigned according to their social status, education, or income. So the advantage of stratified data is that we get to view more closely into data based on class and classify people and view the outcomes of the data based on who is in what class. So to reword that and to give an example as well, if you're testing how much people spend at a grocery store and what things they normally buy, if you stratify the data, you can classify like what types of people buy what things. For example, people who normally get access cards,
they're only limited to food, so they can't buy anything else but food. And we have another example where college students' income can determine how much grant they can get from their school.
That is all for our second podcast. Tune in next time where we'll talk about chapters 7 through 10.